Welcome to Wednesday's Richie Allen radio programme. How you doing? It's been absolutely cats and dogs in Salford today. That western weather front that moved across Ireland has hit the northwest of the UK, and it's been miserable, so it has. But thankfully we've got each other. It's the 10th of March 2021. This is your Richie Allen radio show. Welcome.
It's the BBG, not the BBC. You're listening to the Richie Allen Radio Show, live from Salford in Greater Manchester.
It's the Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Now, I'll be joined for the first time in a long time by Dr. Rima Labo, MD, an old friend of mine, in the second hour of the programme. You don't want to miss her. We're going to be talking about mRNA vaccines, hacking life, hacking human software, and more besides with Dr. Rima Labo, hour two. Before that, Tara Porter will be on the programme. I think Tara is in the south coast of the country. Yeah, I think in Torquay. She might very well be. Tara is a member of a group of parents and teachers who are very concerned about COVID restrictions and how they are affecting school children. Tara, among others, will be taking their children out of school on the 15th of March, that's next week, for a strike to protest these conditions. Fight for Our Kids is the Facebook page. Tara Porter joins the programme this hour. So it's a busy one. Sure, when is it not a busy one? 'Tis always a busy one, indeedy. Right. A news rundown then. I suppose we better get into it, because we just better get into it. It's the formula. Bit of propaganda on the BBC this morning. You can smirk all you want. Sure, when is there not propaganda on the BBC, Baldy? I hear you cry. Well, but it was especially interesting to me this morning. Here's BBC Radio 5 Live. It's kind of comical, this. You will hear Rachel Burden, the presenter. She's kicked off the programme. It's 6:30 and she's welcoming her co-presenter, Nikki Campbell. Funny stuff.
6:27, Nikki is back. Hello. And is it happy vaccination day, Nikki?
It's happy vaccination day.
Oh, I forgot to send you the card.
And the roses arrived, so good. Thank you for that. Wasn't with the roses, no. But you know, it's going to be everything centered around the vaccination today. I'm really, you know, I mean, you were saying, you know, with your parents, it was a moving experience.
I cried
inside.
Yeah.
She cried when her mum and dad got the vaccine.
I'm going to have the vaccination, then I've granted.
She might cry next year.
Granted Oprah an interview to talk to me about it afterwards. So, yeah.
Quite a platform that. Can't wait. I don't know, bidding over the British rights already.
I know. Do you know that bit in the interview where she went, what?
Yeah, let's leave it there. Do any of these presenters have any sense of self-preservation whatsoever? You know, and I don't just mean getting the vaccine. I know some of you sceptics will be there shaking your head saying, Richie, I don't believe that Nikki Campbell will get the vaccine. You might be right. I don't know. But I'm working on the premise that he will get it. But I don't mean self-preservation in terms of self-harm. I mean, do any of them give any thought to the possibility that this vaccine rollout will go south? And when it emerges that many, many thousands of people, maybe many more, have been terribly harmed by these vaccines, they'll have egg all over their faces for participating in the most ridiculous propaganda campaign of all time. Sitting there talking about happy vaccination day, and did you get the card and the roses, and I'm all excited. And I could play a bit more. He goes on to talk about what he's going to wear for his visit to the vaccination centre, Nikki Campbell. Yeah, I thought you'd find that interesting. Have you had your letter yet, or your text message? Do tell me. Liz was in touch yesterday, weren't you, Liz, to say you've had yours and you won't be taking part in the vaccination. You won't be meeting your vaccinator. Couple of things of interest Spiro sent me. I should say Spiro Skouras, by the way, of the Spiro Skouras YouTube channel. Couple of things of interest. This one coming from Australia's ABC News. Health Minister Greg Hunt was admitted to hospital with a suspected infection this week, but it's got nothing to do with the fact that he had the AstraZeneca vaccine at the weekend. His condition isn't believed to be related to the vaccination, says the media and says his office. Again, that's very, very strange. How could they possibly know? Guy gets the vaccine at the weekend. The guy comes down with an infection on Tuesday. It's not the vaccine. How do you know? Fact is, they don't know. But everybody is under starter's orders to, at the earliest opportunity, rule out the vaccine. Just rule out the vaccine. Anyway, he's expected to make a full recovery. We'll see. And this was in Canada last week. I missed this. Why? Why? Well, because I don't have a team of researchers and editors and journalists. It's just me. I missed this from Canada. A judge, and this is from CBC. Thanks again to Spiro. A judge in Windsor ruled that a person's vocal disbelief about coronavirus is a factor in a child custody case. And because of that, a man was denied interim custody of his children. The man doesn't believe in wearing masks. He doesn't believe that coronavirus is very serious. In fact, he believes it is a hoax. And a judge called George W. King, Superior Court Justice in Ontario, he said that these beliefs mean that he wouldn't be able to take appropriate action to keep his children safe from coronavirus, so he won't be seeing his children in any time soon. That's very interesting. And that is something that might become common, not just in Canada, but outside Canada. We might hear similar stories in the UK in the near future. Let's hope not. I heard a funny bit of radio today on Talk Radio. Mike Graham was interviewing Spiked Online editor Brendan O'Neill. Listen now. O'Neill kisses Mike Graham and Talk Radio's arse and makes a distinction between Talk Radio and the mainstream media in general. Listen to this. They had been talking about Piers Morgan and Meghan Markle and all of that jazz. And then they got onto this, Brendan O'Neill from Spiked Online.
The thing that worries me most about the media and the changes in the media in recent years is that it is becoming a bit flat. I mean, this is why somewhere like talk radio is so important, because you give expression to things that millions of people are thinking but are rarely expressed in the mainstream media. If you look at the BBC, it is so catastrophically out of touch with ordinary people. Or if you look at the way in which the backlash against the Society of Editors, because after the Harry and Meghan interview, in which they accused the British media of being bigoted and racist, the Society of Editors put out a pretty good comment saying, look, there's no proof that the British media is racist. Stop saying this. And
well,
now
it's a completely unfounded allegation.
Now, I've heard some bull spit in my time, dear listener. But this bull spit takes the cake, takes the blue ribbon. Declaring talk radio to be independent of the mainstream media, or that it is an alternative station, is ridiculous. Because talk radio is owned by Wireless. You should have heard of Wireless if you're a media observer. Well, you're not a media observer. But if you know your media, you will know of Wireless. It owns talk radio, and it owns... Ding da ding da ding da ding 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 ding. It also owns TalkSport, TalkSport 2, Talk Radio, Virgin Radio, FM 104, Q102, 96FM, C103, Live 95FM, LMFM, U105FM, Scottish Sun 80, Scottish Sun Hits, Scottish Sun Greatest Hits, Times Radio, and... Ding da ding da ding da ding 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 ding. Talk Radio is owned by Wireless, which is owned by, wait for it, News Corp. Talk Radio is owned by News Corp, by the Murdochs. And for Brendan O'Neill to sit there and try and claim and try and set Talk Radio up as some sort of independent alternative to the MSM is egregious in the extreme. Brendan O'Neill is a little liar. Shocking stuff, that. You know, but we live in this era of fake news, ironically. But fake news is not the fake news that they want you to believe is fake news. Fake news is the fact that people in 2021 can claim anything to be true. Say it enough times. Say it enough times and it becomes true, because feelings trump facts. What's made this possible? Confirmation bias has made this possible, in my opinion. a disease. Confirmation bias is a disease. It's a disease, and I'm the cure. A disease that afflicts 99.9% of humanity. I won't bore you with the details because you might know this. It's a disease of the mind. What is confirmation bias? What are the Clift Notes? What is the basic summary? Well, the sufferer goes looking for information that conforms to his or her worldview. Simple as that. The sufferer goes looking for, the sufferer appreciates information that conforms to his or her worldview and discards everything else. Basically, information that agrees with you. You're a hypocrite, Richie. No, I'm not. I've said it before. There are many people who listen to this programme for the reason that I've just given, because it makes them feel good about their worldview. I'd rather they didn't listen to this programme for that reason, but some people do. That's the way it goes. Information that agrees with you. Echo Chamber, Talk Radio, Fox News, Sky, on the one hand, Good Morning Britain, Spiked Online. On the other hand, the Guardian newspaper, right? They thrive on this stuff. They thrive on it. It's how they get readers. Commentary has replaced journalism. Good old-fashioned reporting is dead. Everything is commentary. I predicted this years ago. What was over there is over here, sang George Michael famously one time. That what we were seeing in the United States would come to the UK. Journalism would die and be replaced with commentary. Loud, garish, obnoxious commentary. And Brendan O'Neill isn't stupid. He knows this. And his thingy, Spiked Online, tailors content to suit readers with a certain worldview. And Spiked Online, just like Sky, just like Good Morning Britain, just like the BBC and The Guardian, will omit facts and figures to keep the diseased coming back. Those with the confirmation bias disease. Said it for years. What's happened to the media? It's astonishing. It didn't take too long either. Everything is commentary. No journalism. What is Andrew Neil and GB News going to do? Well, it's going to present to you with 5 or 6 daytime presenters shouting opinions at you. And it will hoover up people, with listeners and viewers, whose worldview is similar to the worldview of the presenters. It's not journalism. It isn't news. And it compounds the problems we face as a society today. It doesn't do anything to alleviate them. Not at all. Shocking. And you see this with the man who drove the lockdown agenda, Piers Morgan, today. Piers Morgan claiming that he is some champion of free speech. This is why he chose to leave Good Morning Britain. Piers Morgan, I'm a champion of free speech, he said. Freedom of speech is a hill I'm happy to die on, said Piers Morgan, who spent most of the last few years ramming his opinion down the throats of his co-workers and any guest that might end up unfortunate enough to be on his programme. And ITV loved it. And the advertisers loved it because it was good for ratings. If I have to fall on my sword for expressing an opinion about Meghan Markle, said Morgan today, so be it. Astonishing. I am a defender of free speech, he said. When Morgan has proven to be anything but, he's one of the greatest enemies of free speech, Piers Morgan. You know this. I've written about this on the website today. He's made a career for himself in recent years, particularly during lockdown in the last 12 months, for haranguing and harassing UK government ministers on Good Morning Britain. And don't think for a minute that I have any sympathy or empathy with Matt Hancock or Nadeem Zahawi or any of them. Of course not. But it's not journalism, it's not news to ask somebody a question and then before they answer, jump down their throat and then goad them and accuse them of being clueless to the point where people just won't come on the programme. Which led to Morgan bragging and boasting about how fearless he was and how scared of him they were. Of course, nothing could be further from the truth. They weren't scared of him at all. It's just boring. Why should I go on the programme to be asked a question and then shouted at? And as I said today, the worst of all of this is that Morgan was hectoring these people, badgering them and bullying them, not to demand that they prove that lockdowns were necessary to keep people alive, but rather to criticise them for not locking down faster or harder. That is the astonishing thing when you look back at all of this, this chapter of UK broadcasting. Morgan on there screaming at the government, not for wrecking the economy, not for destroying the mental health of children, not for bankrupting people, ruining their lives. No, God no. Morgan was shouting at them, in agreement with them, but haranguing them because they weren't doing more of it. Amazing. Amazing. That this arsehole would say he's a defender of free speech. Look at his interview with Jonathan Sumption, former Supreme Court Justice, where he twisted his words, knowing full well that Jonathan Sumption was telling the truth when he said society has always placed value on lives. The value of a healthy 25-year-old is of more interest to society and to governments and to the health service than a 95-year-old woman with a suppressed immune system. He wasn't saying that we should, you know, forget about the 95-year-old granny. You remember the interview. Morgan twisted his words. He goaded him. He interrupted him to the point that Sumption said, I'm going to have to leave the programme. That isn't journalism. And you're seeing more and more of this, and you'll see more and more of it going forward. You know, confirmation bias. We're all guilty of it to some degree. Not me. I divested myself of it a long time ago. I spend most of my time these days listening to opinions that I wouldn't ordinarily, from people I wouldn't ordinarily agree with. That's how these guys are in business. That's why GB News with Andrew Neil will be a success. Sky News will react. It'll become more aggressive in terms of the commentary that its presenters will engage in morning, noon and night. GMB will find another Piers Morgan. It's not journalism. It's not journalism. It's shocking stuff. And the wheel turns. And the beat goes on, as the old saying is. And that's why I said today, rather than a zealous defender of free speech, Morgan is nothing more than a latter-day Lord Haw-Haw. That's all he is. Because what we are seeing unfolding in front of our eyes in the UK is Nazi in the extreme. And Morgan is a champion of it. He enables it. Or he did enable it on Good Morning Britain. Not just him. But he was the cheerleader for it. He was the head cheerleader. Freedom of speech, my arse. There must be 20,000 doctors now practicing doctors, oncologists. Right? And consultants, orthopaedic surgeons, gastroenterologists, GPs, academics. Tens of thousands have signed the Barrington Declaration. It was Piers Morgan's fucking duty to platform these people and to put them up against Matt Hancock. And he didn't. He suppressed them. And he's going about today like a martyr for free speech. Give me a break. Independence. Oh, this is not deep state. All that crap. Brendan O'Neill spiked online. We're railing against the deep state. It is the deep state. Spiked online and talk radio. All that Google had to do to talk radio was suspended for a day and it went straight back into its box. This station that's owned by News Corp that wants you to believe it's the alternative. Give me a break. There is only one alternative professionally produced radio programme in the United Kingdom in 2021 and you're fucking listening to it. That's how bad things have gotten. Shocking stuff, this. It's absolutely devastating to be talking about this today. It really is. No opposition to it anywhere. Madness. I don't know what's going on in Holyrood right now, but they're supposed to be debating the hate crime bill, the Scottish hate crime bill, right now. They're going to vote on it at some stage today. I'll need help here. If there's any movement on it, somebody please send me a tweet. But this new law on hate crime facing its final vote today is madness incarnate. It was introduced last April, hugely controversial. Ultimately, it seeks to criminalise opinions and criminalise people's thoughts. The BBC says that the bill would consolidate existing hate crime law, but also create a new offence of stirring up hatred on the grounds of religion, sexual orientation, age, disability and transgender identity. It's madness, this stuff, and scary. Joe Coburn got into this on Politics Live today with Scottish MSP and, of course, Scottish National Party member, Rona Mackay. She's all in favour of it. And Daniel Hannan, Tory peer. Coburn, the presenter, first asked Rona Mackay, or McKay, will this new bill lead to people being prosecuted for expressing opinions in their own home? This was her response.
No, that is absolutely not the case. It really does need to be stressed that this is a criminal bill. There's a very high threshold for criminal for conviction and criminal procedures, and all allegations have to be proved beyond reasonable doubt in a court of law. Within the bill, we have the Justice Secretary Hamza Yousaf and the Justice Committee have worked very, very hard with a whole variety of stakeholders from equality, racial equality, gender equality groups, faith groups, and victim support groups.
Yes.
To strike the right balance between freedom of expression and protecting the rights of minorities.
Right, but still, Rona, just to say to you, on the basis of that, you've got endless complaints. I mean, the National Secular Society chief executive has said the passing of the hate crime bill will have a chilling effect on freedom of expression in Scotland. Simon Calvert, the deputy director of the Christian Institute, has said whilst we welcome changes that have been made to the bill in response to the huge clamour of opposition it created, people are still rightly concerned about how it will be enforced in practice. And there are also criticisms put forward by Hardeep Singh, spokesman for the Network of Sikh Organisations, who say that MSPs needed to put free speech before party... Well, they have, in fact, put party politics before free speech. So you've hardly allayed the concerns of a whole variety of people.
Well, I hope when the bill comes before Parliament this afternoon that, those concerns will be allayed. I'm certainly will be. As I say, that it really is important to stress this is a bill that doesn't stifle debate. People can still express opinions, use challenging language. They can even they even have the right to offend, shock or disturb. Or why they would want to do that, I've no idea. But it's not about discussion. It's not about opinion or expressing your opinion. It's a criminal bill, and you know it has to be that you have had you've been stirring up racial hatred or gender hatred with intent to threaten or abuse.
Spooky, but that's left up to the alleged victim to decide. That's the spooky thing about it, the alleged victim, and that they must be believed. Very spooky. She's not being truthful. She's lying like a politician. Joe Coburn asks her again.
The Justice Minister, you mentioned him, Hamza Yousaf, said if you're sitting around the dinner table having a debate about transgender identity and your view is that a man can't transition to a woman, then you won't get prosecuted. But if your behaviour is found to be threatening or abusive by a reasonable person and it was intended to stir up hatred and that can be proven beyond reasonable doubt, then you will be prosecuted. So I ask again, are you sure you won't be prosecuted for things that you say in the privacy of your own home if they're deemed to stir up hatred?
She's going to lie again, but the bill makes it very clear that is a possibility, that you could end up on the wrong end of a visit from the old bill if you told somebody around your dinner table, maybe a neighbour, maybe a friend, maybe a cousin, I don't believe that men can be women or vice versa. That could get you in hot water. But she's going to tell lies and say it isn't possible.
Well, yes, I mean, I think if you ask anyone who's been targeted by someone who's, you know, been stirring up hatred with intent to threaten or abuse within their own home.
See, stirring up hatred, saying that you do not believe that somebody born with a tallywhacker, with meat and two veg, is not a woman, is not hateful. It's not hate speech. It's not designed to hurt or to harm. But if this bill goes through in Scotland, it will be effectively criminalised.
Home, and you say, well, they won't be prosecuted because it was within their own home. That's not going to bring them any comfort. I mean, your home should not be a sanctuary when it comes to stirring up hatred.
Your home shouldn't be a sanctuary when it comes to stirring up hatred. Let's give the final word to Daniel Hannan, or Lord Hannan, if you please. He doesn't like this one bit.
I don't understand to what problem this legislation is a solution. We already have clear criminal penalties for incitement, for stirring up violence, right? It's both in English and in Scottish law, that is an ancient remedy. I think it's really sad that particularly in Scotland, the home of Adam Smith and David Hume, the place that got the whole Enlightenment going, the place that elevated and ennobled this idea of personal freedom and of free expression being the way in which we get to the truth by having clashing different interpretations, sometimes strongly expressed, that we are now, we've now got a government that wants to criminalise certain opinions, not actions, not violence, but things that they don't like. And I think that is disproportionate, and I think it is absolutely against the traditions, the open and liberal traditions of Scotland and indeed of the UK.
It's Huxley, it's Orwell, it's dystopian. It's not just against the traditions. It's dreadful. Final word to him.
Well, actually, I think you have to have the freedom to be rude and even obnoxious up to the point of incitement, as long as you are not directly threatening people. Now, that is already prohibited. That is already a criminal offence. So this is not plugging some gap because you were previously allowed to go around stirring up violence against people. That's been illegal for hundreds of years. This is the phrase that Rona just used there that I thought was very telling about sending a message. This is a way for politicians to say, look at me, I care about this issue very much. And that is almost always a recipe for bad, disproportionate law that has unintended consequences.
Yes, Daniel Hannan, I don't know what's going on there. I am paying attention as best as I can to the BBC and Sky News websites. We'll find out, I suppose, in due course, how that debate went and what the ultimate vote, what the result of the vote is, whether the Scottish MSPs voted down or whether they, well, fingers crossed, whether they, that they, that they don't, fingers crossed, they don't basically agree to it and vote in favour of it. We'll find out. This is your Richie Allen radio show. Are you well this Wednesday? Are you wet? You might be wet because it's absolutely horrible out there. Cats and dogs, as I said, we're off to, I think, the South Coast in a couple of minutes' time to speak with Tara Porter. And in the second hour, it's a welcome back, long time, to my friend Dr. Rima Laibo. Hacking the software of life, the mRNA so-called vaccines, which are not vaccines at all, or anything like vaccines. We know that, don't we? I'm the BBG, by the way. This is the Richie Allen Radio Show, live from Salford. The time, 27 minutes past five. Nothing like it. Europe's most listened to independent radio show by a country mile. Thanks for choosing it. Warm welcome to you. Here's a Starship. Music from Starship. Nothing's going to stop us now on the Richie Allen Radio Show. It's 5:30 exactly. And let's introduce our first guest. Looking forward to speaking with her. She reached out to the programme overnight and told me that a group of parents and teachers who are very concerned about the disproportional restrictions and rules on children in schools at the moment will take their children out of school next week on the 15th of March for a kids' strike to protest against these conditions. The group is on Facebook. It's called Fight for Our Kids. Let's welcome to the programme Tara Porter. Hey Tara, how are you?
Hi, thank you. I'm really good, thanks.
Nice to have you on. It's a great DJ name, by the way. Tara Porter. It's a great name. Yeah, you. Tara Porter. I like it. Thanks for reaching out, Tara. This is serious stuff. Tell us about it. What's going on? What led up to the creation of the group?
Okay, so, schools, we were told schools were going back, which was brilliant. Everyone was really happy that schools were going back. And then suddenly it was schools are safe, but only if kids are mask tested and kids have to wear a mask and the teachers are wearing masks and, you know, they've still got to keep away from each other and they've still got to be in bubbles and all of that. And it just really, really got to us. We realised that that's just not right. It's the kids have already lost a year of their education, childhood, you know, and to go back to school and be told they still have to do all these things, it's just horrendous.
How old are yours, Tara?
So I've got four. They're 12, 11, 7 and 5.
So your 12-year-old, he's secondary school now, is he, or just about?
Yeah, he is. Yeah. Yeah, he started in September, but, I mean, he's been there for about 6 weeks in total. because of, you know, the closures and stuff. So he hasn't really, he doesn't really have a clue what secondary school's about.
No. Probably. And has he gone back? No. Did he go back this Monday?
No, so his school were doing the testing over Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and they're going back tomorrow.
They're going back tomorrow?
Again, yeah.
And did your boy...
They're still missing out on 3 days.
Oh, okay. And has your boy taken one of those lateral flow tests?
No, he hasn't, no. No.
You don't want him to take one? Is that it, or...?
I mean, he doesn't want to take one. I'm not keen for him to take one either. I don't... I've never tested them for anything before that they didn't have symptoms for. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
They, you know, they're perfectly healthy. They're well. I don't see the need to test them for something that I know they don't have.
Well, you'll be. You might not be surprised that most of our listeners will agree with you wholeheartedly on that. Mm. Before we talk about what's going on and why you've gotten together with other parents and teachers, can you give us a flavour, from a personal point of view, what has it been like in the last 12 months with four youngsters at home most of the time? How have you coped with that, and what has it meant for their education, Tara?
God, it's been a nightmare. It's been up and down. To begin with, it was kind of like, well, this is fun. It's a bit of a holiday for them, not for me.
Yeah.
And it's just me with all four of them. So, you know, there's just no way that I can be trying to school all of them. They're all at such different levels. My youngest has got speech delays, so she's missed out on practically a year of speech and language therapy. And she's developed tics over the last year because of the anxiety. She started off being such a confident, happy, social little girl to this. I mean, she's still quite confident, but she's a lot more anxious, and you can see it in her body movements and her, you know, just, you can just see it in her eyes. And I feel like, you know, if I'd have been able to do more over the year, if it had just been me and one of them, say, maybe I could have done more. But honestly, it's just been horrendous. It's just not feasible to try and be a teacher and a parent all at the same time.
No, I'm sure you've done your absolute best now, and I'm not saying that in any way to patronise you. I'm genuinely sorry to hear that about your youngest, that she's developed anxiety and she's developed a bit of a tic. You mentioned her age already. Can you remind me, how old is the littlest one?
She's five.
Five. And she's anxious and she's developed a bit of a tic.
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus. What has she seen your GP? Has anybody given you any advice about that?
No. I've mentioned it to her previous school, but there's just nothing that anybody can do at the moment. It's all up and down. You know, they were back in school for a couple of weeks, and then they had a case in their bubble, so they were off school for 2 weeks. And so anything that you bring up, it kind of gets pushed away because they haven't got the time to deal with that, because they're dealing with catching everyone back up again and getting everyone back into school and following the rules again, which is just so difficult.
That's very magnanimous of you, Tara, to say that. Yeah,
yeah,
because they are under pressure as well. They're human beings as well, and they've got their own children, many of these teachers,
totally,
and head teachers.
Yeah.
In the course of the 12 months, were yours offered Zoom lessons? And if so, what were those like?
So, we didn't have any actual live Zoom lessons. There was online work to do. But it was just really difficult because I'm not that technical. So, you know, I've turned on the laptop and tried to get onto these things that they've got to do, trying to take it in turns as well so that they can all get on there to do something. And, you know, I'm finding it difficult to work my way around these websites that I've never done before. And with these little ones going, come on, I want to do this. And it's just really pressurized.
Yeah.
My oldest did get given a Chromebook from his secondary school at the beginning of this year, I think it was, to do some of his work on, which was really nice at the school, but it just wasn't the same. And I found he was just sat there 6 hours a day looking at the screen, it wasn't good for him. So I told him that he would only be doing some paperwork, if they could send some paper out to him, and then doing other things that were good for his well-being, because it just wasn't right. I couldn't let him just sit there suffering.
As well as, I mean, I've had people on the programme over the years giving out about, you know, how education has gone and people being a bit worried about some of the things that children might be being taught. But I've always said, you know, there's still, as long as the parents can keep a fairly good handle on what's going on, they're still better off in school, in the playground, because that's where they get to be with their mates, with people their own age. And I can't imagine how difficult it's been for the youngsters not having that. And then there's the insecurity that it's hard. I mean, you get this so intimately because you're their mum, you're their flesh and blood, you carried them. Yeah. So you can feel this in them, this anxiety. And I wonder, Tara, what is it doing to them? Because they're so bright when they're as young as your five-year-old. They hear everything. And when they hear about giving diseases to granny, and when they hear about lockdowns and they hear all this stuff, it must be disturbing
it's
them.
It's horrible.
It must be.
Yeah. I mean, I've tried to keep it quite, you know, chilled out at home. But they come home and, you know, my five-year-old has come home and said that she needs to wash all the germs away off her hands. And I think it's just little things like that they've been hearing that are getting in, and you don't always know, because you don't, you know, they don't know how to express that they're worried about something, so it comes out in different ways, and it just makes you it's just awful. It's heartbreaking to know that they're suffering.
It might be like plugging a dam, is it, Tara? It might be like trying to plug a dam with your finger, because I can imagine you saying to the five-year-old, and I'm sure she believes you, she loves you, you're her mum, listen, don't worry about it, don't worry about the germs, don't worry about all of that, and it's fine, and she'll go to bed and she'll sleep well. But the following day, somebody else will say, oh, the germs, oh, the virus, oh, wash your hands. It's like taking one step forward and two steps back, I would imagine, and I have no experience of parenting whatsoever. And the 12-year-old then going back, and you don't want him to have a test, and how has the school responded to that? And I'm sure you don't want him wearing a mask in the class either, hence you wouldn't be part of the group. So tell us about that then. Are you worried about some pushback from the school? How will that work?
Yeah, so I've always told the school that he's exempt from wearing a mask anyway. So from September, when they went back to school, he was exempt. He did have a couple of incidents where different teachers were sort of questioning him about that, which again is not necessary for school, but I've emailed the school again to just to get confirmation that this isn't going to be an issue, that it's not going to be anything that he's going to get into trouble for, or there's not going to be any bullying or anything because of it, because I've, you know, the school have been accepting of what I've said. But I have heard incidents of people saying these things to the school agreeing, and then the kids going to school and having the peer pressure of seeing, you know, their friends all in masks or all getting the tests, and they are segregated. And for a 12, 13, 14-year-old, you know, they don't deal with that very well.
Are you worried about that? Are you worried about, you know, the possibility of, listen, sit at the back of the class, or don't sit with your mates at lunchtime? Because I've read some of that in some of the newspapers. I hope you won't be subjected to any of that, Tara.
No, well, I hope not. And I'm quite on the ball with that school at the moment. I think they're probably sick of me. But I, you know, if I don't fight for my kids, nobody else is. So I'm going to do it. And if that means I have to be in contact every day, then I will. But I am a bit concerned, because once they're there, it's not like primary school. You're not a part of it as much as you are when they're little, you know. So if he has a friend or some other people say to him, oh, you didn't get the test, or you're not wearing a mask, or, you know, and they don't want to be near him, then in his mind, that's going to give him insecurities. It's going to think, you know, make him think, perhaps I should just do this to fit in then. And I know of a lot of kids that are doing that, that are going along with it because they don't want to stand out.
We've all
and
done
it's not
it.
Fair.
It isn't fair. Let me remind our listeners. Let's talk now before. Let me remind our listeners who we're speaking with. We've got Tara Porter on the line. Tara's a parent, as you've been hearing, to four children. Five is the youngest and 12 is the oldest. The laddie's in secondary school now. Tara is part of a group of parents and teachers. They run a group called Fight for Our Kids, and they're so concerned about these restrictions and the conditions that are harmful, and maybe I shouldn't say this, I'm supposed to be impartial, but they are harmful to children and to children's development. So worried are the parents about this that they're planning on sending a message to the schools on March 15th by taking the children out of school for a day. I'm guessing, Tara, that didn't come easy to you, that. I mean, you sound very, very rational, very sensible, very nice. I imagine you didn't just decide to do that at the drop of a hat. I'm sure you had to think about it.
Yeah, totally. I mean, you know, after a year, and again, people will say this to me, you know, after a year of them being messed about by school, being in and out, why would I want to take them out for another day? Well, I don't. I don't want to take them out for another day. I just feel like nobody is listening. Nobody is taking on board what's best for the kids. Just the only way, I think, is going to be if parents say no, this isn't happening. Parents can say no for the secondary school children, but like I've said, they can go to school and then they've got their own, you know, they've got their own issues, their own peer pressure that will change their minds. But for primary school children, we can say no as the parents, and we can stop it. You know, we can say no, I'm not going to send my child in until you listen and you know, just consider what we're saying, just to consider what we're saying. Not,
absolutely.
You know, I'm not expecting everything to change overnight, but
the virus doesn't touch children, and it doesn't. And there is no evidence that children are exceptional carriers of whatever it is. There's no evidence to support any of that. This is the really frustrating thing for me. So I can't even imagine how you must feel having to deal with it as a parent. And you said you have teachers in the group. That interests me greatly, because I was in touch, or a lady was in touch with the programme. I've tried to reach out to her, but I can't get her. Right. I know she listens. A former teacher called Lucy got in touch with the programme the other day and said she gave up teaching last year because of these restrictions. She was sick of it, you know. And we heard from a teacher, of course. I heard from a teacher the other evening on the phone, in a gentleman who's in Zanzibar now, who got fed up of it as well, and he left. So tell us about the teachers then. That's probably a positive thing. The teachers are saying, yes, this is wrong. So you've got teachers as well, Tara.
Yeah, so one of our teachers that's on board is, she's a PE teacher, and so the PE hall in her school is being used as the testing centre. So obviously she's not going to be able to teach PE like she would normally do. And she can see the harms that that's going to cause the children, because, again, after a year of being told to stay at home, don't socialise, don't sort of play too much, you know, kids are going to be, they're not going to be used to exercise, are they, as much?
No.
And getting physical. So it is a big deal. And it's just part and parcel of school. And again, there are some kids that really thrive on the physical side of school. You know, some kids aren't bothered about the academics. They're more interested in the PE and the, you know, the woodwork and things like that.
Of course.
And they're missing out.
They are missing out, aren't they? They are.
Yeah.
I'm thinking of lads that I went to school with. Mostly lads now, it must be said. Not too many girls at the time, though it's changed. Mm. But they were good with their hands, so they did woodwork and metalwork. And you know, if that was them and that was us now, they'd be in serious trouble. And you go back again to how they should be playing. And you've been there now for a year with the four of them. And I suppose because people are so scared of, you know, breaking lockdown or breaching the guidelines, does that mean that you found it difficult to arrange playtimes for your youngest children in the last 12 months? Has that been difficult?
Oh, yeah, really difficult. Again, my youngest has got, you know, a really good friend who she hasn't been able to see because, you know, these rules just keep changing. I think nobody knows what to do for the best.
Sorry to interrupt you, Tara. That's difficult because it sounds to me like you would have been happy last year, knowing full well that there was hardly any risk at all, to allow your little girl to play with other little girls her age in the park or in the garden. But other parents are listening to this stuff and they're believing it, and they're not so keen to allow their children play, and that leaves your child basically with nobody to play with.
Yeah, really hard. It's really hard to explain that to your child when you're trying not to scare them, when you're trying to keep it low key for them. You know, you can't it's difficult for them to understand why them, you know, their friend isn't allowed to play with them. I mean, luckily we've been, you know, we've been managing to get to the park, and there have been some children that have been allowed to play. But you also get the other children that want to play with your child, and then, you know, the parent will come along and say, "Oh, right, come away, move away," and it's just heartbreaking, heartbreaking for my child, and heartbreaking for to see that happening to other children. Because, you know, if my 5-year-old is suffering so badly, and I haven't been sort of ramming it down her throat, imagine what it's doing to the kids that are living with parents who are living totally in fear.
Trauma.
I just can't imagine.
Yeah, it's traumatic. It must be traumatic. Look, we've heard enough. I mean, to be fair, one or two, maybe more than one or two child psychologists have broken ranks and have said, look, this is going to be devastating for children. And can I ask you, Tara, first of all, before I ask you this question, which you don't have to answer, by the way, the Facebook group is Fight for Our Kids. It is a closed group, but don't worry about it. I'm sure they'll let you in if you are a parent of a child and you do have an interest in this and you introduce yourself. I'm sure they'll let you in. Fight for Our Kids are planning to take their children out of schools on March 15th, which is, it's Monday, isn't it? It's this coming Monday, for a strike to protest the conditions. And Tara Porter is involved in that. Can I ask you, and I mean this, and you don't have to answer it if you don't want, how have you dealt with it? You've been under some pressure by the sounds of it. And regardless of how intelligent you are and how articulate you are, and you obviously are, Jesus, Tara, it can't be easy for you. How have you coped yourself? Have you been able at any time to give yourself a little break from it? You know, to have a drink, to have a night out, to have anything. How have you coped yourself on a personal level?
Well, I mean, luckily I've got amazing friends around me who are also, you know, a part of this. And without them, I just, you know, I don't know how I would have got on. It's been really difficult. I think a lot of parents don't want to admit how difficult it's been, because I think they feel like it's some kind of failure to say that you haven't enjoyed every second of being with your child. But it's not natural to spend 24 hours a day, 7 days a week for a whole year with your children. You know, nobody goes, oh, I'm going to have children and then, you know, I'm going to spend every waking second with them forever. That's not realistic. And to have done that has really put a strain on our relationships. You know, I feel like me and my 12-year-old have had some really tough times, especially at a time where, you know, things are changing for him. And we should be, you know, it's going to be difficult anyway. But with this, it's just made it even more difficult.
Yeah, he's on the verge of puberty now. He's on the verge of puberty. He's getting an attitude. Of course he is. I was there. Yeah. I had the biggest chip on my shoulder of all time. I still do, Tara, to be honest. But no, when I was 12, I did. So I can't imagine how difficult that is going to be for you. Do you have any advice whatsoever? I mean, there will be women and men listening to this now who are thinking, Jesus, it's tough. I'm in the same boat. Any advice on how to deal with the 12-year-old or the 5-year-old? Any tips at all?
Oh, just don't try and be perfect. Just don't try and be super parent, because none of us are. None of us are perfect. Just be more honest with people. Just say when you feel like you're failing. You know, if you feel like you're doing a rubbish job, tell somebody, because the fact that you're even thinking that you're doing a rubbish job means that you care and that you're not doing a rubbish job. Yeah. That's been the best advice I've been given, you know.
Bloody good advice.
To doubt yourself means that you must care.
And of course it does. And has the group now, Fight for Our Kids, and the getting to know, you know, parents in the same situation, has that been a bit of a help for you? I'm sure it has been.
Oh, God, definitely. I mean, I think, again, a lot of people have said, oh, wow, I'm so shocked that other people feel the way that I do. I think we're shown so much in the media about, you know, how people are coping with this, and actually we don't see enough of the other side where people aren't coping. So even if with this I've just got some people to say I'm not coping, you know, that's it's been worth it, because I it's been horrible, it's been horrendous, and I can't imagine, you know, going through it alone. So if anybody else has been going through this alone and they haven't wanted to reach out, then, you know, just they definitely should, because it does make you feel a lot better to know that you're not alone.
Fantastic. And give a plug again now to the Facebook group, and there's also, I think, a Telegram account. Do you want to plug those?
Yes, so we've got a Telegram group that's it's growing by the day, actually. I'm not sure what the actual name of it is.
It's Fight for Telegram. Our Kids. So if you're on Telegram, Fight for Our Kids, you'll get there immediately, yeah.
That's it. And, the Facebook group is Fight for Our Kids as well, which we will have to accept people into the group, but as long as we can see that you're actually there for the right reasons, then we will accept it, yeah.
Fantastic. Tara, the best of luck on Monday to you and everybody else involved.
Thank you so much.
Not at all. You're obviously a great mum. You're doing great things for your kids. You're doing the best you can. And hopefully the schools will meet you halfway and will do away with these ridiculous draconian restrictions and let children get back to normal. I've enjoyed chatting with you. Thanks so much for reaching out to us. Yeah. And do stay in touch, Tara.
Brilliant. I will do. Thank you.
You're very welcome. Bye for now. That was Tara Porter speaking to us live from her home today on the Richie Allen Radio Show, speaking about, of course, her campaign and the strike action they're planning to take this coming Monday, taking children out of schools to protest against these restrictions that they believe are devastating for the well-being of children, because they are. There's no two ways about it. Fight for Our Kids is the Facebook group, if you want to check it out, and the Telegram, if you're on Telegram, look for Fight for Our Kids and you'll get it pretty much straight away. Nice to have her on. Sounds like a lovely lady. Tough times, eh, for parents. I can't imagine it, so I'm not going to pretend I understand it, because I don't. I've had no experience of it. It must be horrendous. Right, lots of comments came in. You can tweet to me at any time. It's at BBGRichie. Charlie Stevenson, who's well-versed in dealing with prepubescent children and pubescent children. Charlie tells me, Richie, approach the stroppy teen slowly from behind and gently clip the ear hole with an open palm. Say calmly, pack it in right now. Repeat until symptoms subside, says Charlie. Ah, old school, Charlie. You can't beat a bit of old school. So you can't. Lovely stuff. How you doing, Debs? Thanks, Debs, for the endorsement there. And hi to Proly. Now, Proly says, Richie, our boy came home today, said he removed his own mask as he was feeling dizzy and nauseous. When questioned, he told them straight that he isn't wearing it. No comeback from the teachers, apparently. That's my boy, says Proly. I will be writing again in the morning. I've had no response from the school so far, says Proly there. Thanks for these stories, by the way. I appreciate them. Andy Newman refused the vaccine today, and he's happy tonight. Thanks, Andy. Thanks for that, my friend. I will be refusing it as well. God damn it, can't start it, you know that. John was on to tell me, John has been in touch about this. His youngest two had to wear their uniforms on Zoom lessons. And they were told that it was good for morale, says John. Wow. Eh? That's a bit strict, isn't it? Gaz was on to say that he was told it was up to his child if he wants to wear a mask in class. That all the kids wear masks. In other words, the school was putting pressure on the child by saying, it's up to you, but everybody else is doing it. I am not putting this on my son, said Gaz. It's disgusting. Thank you, Gaz. And Gail is a grandmother. How you doing, Gail? My sister's granddaughters just started, I should say, she's a grand aunt then. Or a great grand aunt, is that right? My sister's granddaughters just started school last September. One just turned 6 and one is 5. They have to wear the uniform for Zoom classes, says Gail, as well. And maybe the response previous was responding to Gail. They have a snack break and a lunch break. They both got new school shoes. They've worn them for about 3 weeks, says Gail. This is the Richie Allen Radio Show, live from Salford. The time is approaching 3 minutes to 6 o'clock. Dr. Rima Labo will join me right soon. I'm really happy about that. It's been a long time since Dr. Rima, MD, by the way, was on our programme.
Renowned healer Mark Bajerski travels the world to find the most unique and powerful crystals for self-healing. Since the ancient times, crystals have been used as healing tools. They hold a natural healing vibration and are highly charged in positive energy. Mark teaches how to channel the universal energy and transfer it to the crystal to activate its healing power. Each crystal is used for its unique ability to target a different physical or emotional challenge. Mark Bajerski is an author, healer, speaker, and founder of the Pure Energy Healing Academy. He shares powerful messages of inspiration and healing on his daily YouTube videos, reaching millions worldwide. Mark's crystals, healing oils, and incense sticks are most sought after by other healers. His collection is available online at www.markbajerski.com. His work is presented through Lemon House, a company that creates and curates consciously made gifts.
Lovely stuff. Lovely hurling. Lovely hurling. Lovely stuff. Yeah, it is nearly 2 minutes to six now. I tell you this, I'm repeating myself, because you might need to know the time. Old school radio, you know. Old school radio. Lovely. Now, Dr. Rima will be with me in a couple of minutes' time. Thanks for your tweets. Keep them coming in. Please do visit richieallen.co.uk. Please, please. I put some articles on there daily. Some of them are good. Some of them are bad. Some of them are horrid. All right? Doesn't matter. Just a few opinions and such like. And you can interact with them. You can talk amongst yourselves there. And I do read some of the comments. And I'm impressed, it must be said, by your candour and your wit and your ability to disagree with people without melting down into silly arguments and stuff. It's always good that, you know. Hi to Bill, who says, uniforms on Zoom meetings. That's just stupid, says Bill. I'd have told him to get lost. If you want the kids to wear uniforms, then open the feckin' schools, says Bill. Good man, Bill. Ma on fire. Hi, Catherine. Catherine says, Richie, our home-educated six-year-old, who loves listening to you get in, says, just take them out of school and teach them the truth. A six-year-old, Catherine's six-year-old, who loves listening to this programme, says, take them out of school and teach them the truth. Wendy says, Monday, 15th of March, is the Ides. The Ides of March. Beware the Ides of March. Wendy knows her Julius Caesar. Indeed. Lovely. Hi to William. My local medical centre has this container of green hand sanitizer at the front door with no labels on it whatsoever. I'm just going to retweet that. You need to see this if you're on Twitter. I've retweeted it there. Shall we have another tune? Shall we? I think we shall. This time it's Aztec Camera. Jesus, huh? 'Tis an 80s classic bit of cheese. Music from Aztec Camera, I think 87, I think. I could be wrong, could be earlier than that. On the Richie Allen Radio Show, approaching 4 minutes past the hour, it is Wednesday's programme. It's the 10th of March, 2021. It's been too long since my next guest was on the programme. Consider her a great friend, a great pal. She's been appearing on my radio programmes ever since I departed from commercial radio, from mainstream radio, to do these programmes. She's brilliant. She's a doctor and an author and is the medical director of the Natural Solutions Foundation. A real pleasure to welcome back to the programme. I can't believe it's been nearly a year. Welcome back, Dr. Rima Labo. Rima, welcome back.
Thank you so much, Richie. I'm delighted to be here, as always.
It's great to have you back on. There's no good reason why it's been so long. You're a busy woman. You've got your own. You've got your books. You've got your website. You've got your consultations. You've got your programs. So, but here you are. Thank heavens for that. Before we get into that incredible bit of information you sent me today about claims made by Moderna's top man and what the mRNA vaccines really are, tell me, and be as colourful as you like, my friend, in the language that you use, what has the last year been like for you?
Well, it's like being committed without having committed any offence or crime, committed to an insane asylum where the people running the insane asylum are not those confined to it. They are a group of terminally insane, genocidal madmen who have acquired carefully and over a great deal of time the power to run that insane asylum. And one of their main activities has been to convince the people inside the insane asylum, us, that their version of reality makes some sort of sense and is in fact correct. So I'm watching institutionalized insanity become more and more and more outrageous. It's like living in a world created by Kafka with technology. I will give you the latest bit of insanity that a friend of mine, a colleague of mine from Sweden, called me with this morning. He said, a man was just arrested in Germany for standing still outdoors.
I shouldn't laugh.
Now, if that plus a fake pandemic plus a fake set of, quote, public health measures, end quote, including masking, which actually is very harmful on a chronic basis and has absolutely no effect on the transmission of viral diseases, but does cause lung disease and mouth disease. Let's talk about mouth disease for just one second. Masks chronically worn for long periods of time on a regular basis cause periodontal disease, dental gum disease. Periodontal disease is a risk factor which increases your chance of dying of the alleged COVID viral disease by 900%. So you put a mask on, you create an excessively moist and bacteria laden environment in your mouth with too much carbon dioxide, and you foster the development of periodontal disease. Then when you get whatever it is that's being misdiagnosed as COVID, when you get a pneumonia, when you get a lung infection, a bronchitis, a bronchiolitis, when all that happens and the mask fosters that too, then your chance of dying from the periodontal disease that was induced by the mask of the lung disease.
You might have somebody at the door there, Rima. You might have a visitor, maybe.
I do. But he'll stop in a moment.
Will you? I mean, you can get the door if you want. I mean, I can carry on. I can talk to myself, will you?
Okay, I'll be right back.
No worries. You take your time there. Dr. Rima Labo is our guest, the medical director of the Natural Solutions Foundation. I'll leave her fader up just in case it's the Boston Strangler at the door and not the... Not an Amazon or a DPD delivery driver. A great lady, real doctor, MD. You might remember Rima's husband was the late, great General Bert Stubblebine. Lovely gentleman who was on this programme a few years ago. Sadly, no longer with us. Ah, you're back. Good stuff. What a great guard dog he is, Rima.
Let me point out that the insane, psychopathic monsters who are running this program of deceit and death, because it is a genocidal program, as we've been warning about since 2004, these monsters are also responsible directly for the death of that late, great, beautiful human being, my husband, General Stubblebine. So these are people who run with scissors and do not play well with others.
He was a great man, Rima. It was lovely to meet him that one time, and I say that from the heart, I mean it. I know you, I've known you for years, I know you never make a claim without the evidence, and you know I will always ask, the periodontal information you shared with our audience a moment ago, that is supported by a study or a peer-reviewed study, is it?
Yes, it is supported by a peer-reviewed study, which says that, first of all, we know that dentists are publishing articles in professional journals about something they're now calling mask mouth, which is the dental and periodontal disease an infection caused by this change in atmosphere. Let me tell you what a mask does.
And by the way, just before you do, they're expecting children in UK high schools to wear those for 8 hours a day in classes. And you're telling parents tonight this might be, without scaremongering, because you're not doing that, but it could turn out to be fatal for some of those children.
Children are already dying. If you go on the internet and do a quick search, by the way, don't use Google, use DuckDuckGo.com as your primary and only search engine. Several years ago, I did a study of the major search engines. Google has something called Knowledge Vault, which means, Richie, that if you and I are sitting right next to each other and doing the same search on our two computers, Google will decide what knowledge you may have access to and what knowledge I may have access to via algorithms that have been in place for a number of years. They lock up information that they don't want me to have or you to have. And you may say, well, okay, I'll use yahoo.com. Nope. There are a number of search engines which have different faces, but are Google clones. They are based on the Google platform. And so the only major search engine that I found that was not a Google clone and does not track your searches and share that information, of course, is DuckDuckGo.
Well said.
So if you have any interest in being a free person, information is critical, and DuckDuckGo is a tool
well
that
done.
I would recommend.
Now, I want you, because you're an old hand, a dab hand at radio, I want you to manage the rest of this hour, because we can only go till about 4 minutes to the top of the hour. And I know there's lots you want to say, so we got to manage the next 45 minutes or thereabouts. I want to ask you straight up, so I want you to be as listen, you're always concise, but I want you to keep an eye on the clock. What do you think the virus is? What is it? Does it even exist, coronavirus?
Well, now that's a very interesting question. There are two answers to does it even exist. And by the way, my favorite thing to do is to talk with an intelligent host like you and have a dialogue, because your questions and your knowledge that I don't have and our interaction feeds me as well as the audience. So no, I don't want to manage this. I want to have a conversation with you, as I always do, Richie.
Thanks, Rima. We'll keep an eye on the clock between us, because yes. I know you have so much to say. We could do 4-5 hours on this. So you said there's two possible answers to COVID.
Yes. First of all, the test, and I've just published this on what I think of as a very, very important resource for information. There is a website called Open Source Truth, which is our news aggregation site. And Richie, I'd like to invite you to become a contributing editor to our uncensored platform. You can post your shows, articles, information,
Brilliant.
Data,
Lovely.
Et cetera, and spread it out to an even wider audience. Well, Open Source Truth yesterday is a place where I put up a graphic showing that the Rothschild system, patented starting in 2015, again in 2016, again in 2017, 2019, and 2020, the biometric tests for the COVID-19 disease or supposed virus. Now, allegedly, the virus did not exist, and it's called COVID-19. This is not something that I interpolate to be a test for COVID. These are the test kits that are used wrongly in the PCR and antibody testing. So the COVID-19 test kits were patented in pieces, improved and repatented, and starting in 2015 under the name COVID-19 biometric test kit, for a virus that allegedly did not yet exist. Odd. And we know that the sale of the biometric test kit for COVID-19, and that's with the 19 in the name, began in sales lots of the millions, the multi-millions, to countries around the world in 2017. I have published those bills of lading and invoices on opensourcetruth.com. This is not conspiracy theory. This is conspiracy fact, and the conspiracy is on the side of the insane, psychopathic, globalist depopulationists.
Hey, by the way, Reuters News Agency last year in October did a fact check. Wait for this now, before you jump down my throat, because I believe you're onto something here. Reuters News Agency did a fact check and said that the claim that the testing method for COVID-19 was patented by Richard Rothschild in 2015 and 2017 is false, that this application happened in May of 2020, or May 17th last year. But I've, in advance of you coming on, I've looked into it, and I'm pretty sure they're wrong and you're right.
If you go to opensourcetruth.com, you will see a screenshot of the U.S. patent website, which shows, yes, they did make a patent application in May 2020. That's true. But they also made a patent application, and the patents were granted in 2015, 16, 17, 19, as 18 and 19 as well. So the fact check is a deceptive whitewash of partial truth. The best disinformation is a weaving, a seamless weaving of truth and lie. And those fact checks from Reuters, like the fact checks from Facebook, I mean, the term Facebook fact checker is such an oxymoron that I have trouble getting it out of my mouth, my unmasked mouth, by the way. And I don't have periodontal disease, and I certainly wouldn't wear a mask to restrict my oxygen and increase my carbon dioxide and make sure that I do have periodontal and lung and other diseases. But anyway, the point is that fact-checking is a political tool and has very little to do with reality, because all of the mainstream media, which require large amounts of money to run, get those large amounts of money from the same factions that are controlling our perception of the world,
the same corporations,
constant drumbeats of disinformation.
Yeah, you're right. From the same corporations. You're absolutely spot on. The same banks, same special interest groups. So the virus then, as quick as you can.
Let me go back to the answer to that.
Is it real?
I'm sorry, I distracted myself.
Oh, it's okay.
The virus was patented by Duke University, the United States Institutes of Medicine. Anthony Fauci has 4 individual patents on various parts of the virus. And in 2015, as we know well, when gain-of-function research was briefly, for only 2 years, made illegal or made a forbidden activity in the United States, it was outsourced by Fauci with U.S. tax dollars to the Wuhan CDC. But the Wuhan CDC laboratory, the biosecurity, supposed level 4, very poor, very shoddy level 4 facility, has been doing Rockefeller Institute research, gain-of-function research, for a very long time. The Rockefeller Institute has been active in China in its, quote, health and, quote, research system for a very, very long time, over 100 years. They're well integrated. So the Wuhan laboratory acquired a colony of intermediate horseshoe bats at American taxpayer expense that was brought in to cycle the virus through in the gain-of-function research. And gain-of-function is a fancy term for let's make it more deadly, because it's a bioweapon and we can kill more efficiently once we've completed our gain-of-function studies. 1 year after this supposedly non-existent coronavirus, genetically engineered coronavirus, which, as all of your listeners know, contains four strands of DNA from the H1N1 virus, one strand of DNA from the SARS, that's the COVID-1 genetically engineered virus, and several strands of genetic information from the malaria parasite. Footnote, in nature, the coronavirus cannot wed its DNA, its payload, with virus material from an adenovirus, which is what the HIV-1 virus is, nor from a multi-cell, nor from a parasite like the falciparum malaria parasite. It's impossible. It can't happen. So we know from the fact that this is part of the COVID-19 viral DNA, that it has to be genetically engineered. And several Nobel Prize winning geneticists and others have said the same thing. Well, we move forward 1 year, and the Perbright Institute, which is a Bill Gates organization, patented the vaccine. Allegedly, these vaccines were developed at warp speed, and oh my, what a miracle, and aren't we lucky? This is horse pucky. The vaccine was patented, or a vaccine was patented a year later, but allegedly never tested on humans. Now, if we want to talk about the vaccine, so somebody was doing gain of function work on a bioweapon called COVID-19. It is very odd to me as a scientist, as a human being, as a commentator on the misuse of science and the genocidal agenda being carried out. It's very interesting to me that while there are thousands of laboratories around the world that have the capacity to sequence the DNA of a virus very quickly, I mean, we're talking about no big deal at this point, somehow or other, nobody has managed to characterize fully this particular virus. Yeah. They've managed to characterize 20 or 30,000 base pairs, but somehow they haven't managed to characterize the entire virus, except for the fact that those scientists who have, like a very, very reputable, solid team in India, who almost immediately published the full genome of the virus, they, within hours, were forced to withdraw their paper, and the reputable journal that accepted it for publication withdrew it. Now, what does that tell you, given the fact that, quote, reputable scientific journals all survive the same way that mass media outlets all survive, which is by funding from these very same organizations. Forces.
Can I make a guess? Here's my guess. The reason, when the scientists described the genome of the virus, and here's my guess now, and this is why it's so fantastic having you on the program today. Whatever it is, it isn't of any great concern for the vast majority of people, whatever it is. And we know this because of the numbers. So my guess is that the virus itself was never meant to be the thing that changes or alters people and our biological makeup. That was always meant to be the vaccines that they're rolling out now, that they're demanding that everybody takes. So they couldn't, I suppose, allow it to be known that the virus itself really wasn't anything to get your kind of underpants in a knot about. Am I talking silly now, or am I on the right track here?
You're absolutely, totally on the right track. There is a virus. It is another genocidal failure. There have been, in our lifetimes, Richie, a whole series of genocidal failures. The genocidalists have been working on this plan for a long time, well over 100 years, as a matter of fact. And since about 2000, and two, the efforts with the new technologies that have become available have ramped up substantially. But the whole terror, the genocidal pandemic that was supposed to wipe out so many of us was supposed to be avian flu. Oops, that failed to replicate because the temperature in the nose is lower than the temperature in the body, and so the virus didn't replicate well. Dud. Swine flu. Oops, that didn't work because people caught on to the idea that the vaccine was really quite dangerous and that there was no real threat. And so people stayed away from the vaccine in droves. Yeah. And in remember, vaccines select the disease. The best way, according to epidemiologists like Andrew Maniotis, an emeritus professor from the University of Pennsylvania, in epidemiology, the best way to predict where an outbreak, an epidemic, or a pandemic will occur is to track where the vaccination programs have been. That's where you're going to have the disease outbreaks. So because vaccines damage the immune system and select for the disease. This is conventional vaccines. The ones that we're looking at now are significantly worse. So the vaccine was first patented by the Perbright Institute in 2016, and we have that patent. We've published it. This is not theory. And the pieces were put in place to scare the living daylights out of people to gain social control. The people, mostly the people who have died of anything having to do with this virus, have died from the diagnosis of the virus, by which I mean either they were put on ventilators and killed. In New York, 98.5% of the people who were put on ventilators died.
Remember that? Remember that? That was the last time we spoke. You came on to talk to me about that. And you were absolutely spot on. Rima, let me remind our listeners, I'm sorry for the interruption. I'm going to shut up and let you carry on again. We've got Dr. Rima Labo, MD, folks, on the programme. An old and dear friend of mine and this programme. Medical Director of the Natural Solutions Foundation, a doctor and an author. Rima believes, and we've gotten into this over the years, that the H1N1 and swine flu viruses were meant, the avian flu and swine flu viruses were meant to do a lot of damage, were meant to do away with lots of people, but they failed. She's given her reasons for that. She's explained it. This virus now, as we've been discussing, was maybe not meant to do away with so many people, but it was, as Rima just said there, to scare the living daylights out of people into taking a brand new, never before done, first of its kind vaccine or gene therapy treatment or whatever it's called. And here we are today. Millions of people in the UK have already taken a Pfizer or an AstraZeneca or a Moderna vaccine. Millions more don't want to take these vaccines and are refusing them. And now Dr. Rima Labo has come around, I think, to explaining what these vaccines really are, what they represent. That's what people need to know and what they won't hear on the BBC. Go ahead, Rima.
Currently, in the United States, there are two different types of so-called vaccines. And let me emphasize the word so-called. These are not vaccines. They are injected. That doesn't make them a vaccine. If I give you a shot of vitamin B12, I injected it into your deltoid muscle, but it's not a vaccine. A vaccine legally, and this is true in the UK, it's true in the US, Canada, most countries in the world, a vaccine is a preparation that presents an antigen to the immune system so that the immune system can create an antibody. Now, whether this strategy of vaccination actually prevents disease or damages the body is another discussion. I happen to believe that it is not an effective way of preventing disease, and it does damage the body. But that's a different discussion. Legally, a vaccine is something which presents an antigen to the body to stimulate the production of an antibody so that the animal, the human being, can protect itself. The mRNA technology is injected, but it is gene therapy. It was patented as gene therapy. And in fact, in a TED talk in 2017, Dr. Tal Zaks, the chief medical officer at Moderna, explained that these mRNA technology vaccines are, and I quote, hacking the software of life.
Yeah.
Now, when you take an mRNA vaccine, you have a problem that goes back somewhere between 20 and 30 years and has not yet been solved. Here's the problem. The mRNA technology has been in research for that length of time, and they were able to create injections which most of the animals who received survived. So most of the animals didn't die when they got either one or two shots of the mRNA vaccine material. However, when the, and we're talking about mice and primates and ferrets and rats and cats, we're talking about a lot of different organisms. Once they were exposed to either the same virus or a related virus, and let me remind you that coronaviruses have been around forever, and that 15%,
somebody else at the door again.
15, just give me 1 second.
Not at all, take your time.
Timber.
A great dramatic pause, a dramatic pause here. This is very important stuff.
Yeah, it's very important. 15% of the... Timber, good boy. Come back. Good boy. His job is to be a watchdog.
He's a bloody good one by the sounds of it. He sounds big too. I wouldn't mess with him.
Yeah. So 15% of the colds, 15% of the colds that we get, the ordinary common colds, are caused by coronaviruses. Every one of us has had coronaviruses in our body. Sometimes we've gotten sick, sometimes we haven't, sometimes we've been exposed to other people's coronaviruses. We all have coronavirus exposure. Well, back to the laboratory animals. Every time these animals were exposed to either the same virus or a related virus, 100% of the animals died.
100%.
I will repeat that. Oh, you repeated it. That's perfect. 100% of the animals died. This is a kill shot.
Is this what pathogenic priming is?
That's exactly what it is. It's pathogenic priming. And what happens is that the mRNA, the synthetic mRNA, and we're not even talking about the sensitivity to the polyethylene glycol and the long and intermediate term effects of having this this allergic autoimmune incitin in your body. Never mind that for a moment. But what happens is that the entire very complex, very delicate and delicately balanced immunological mechanism, and there are many, many, many parts to it. There are circulating parts, there are tissue-fixed parts, there are signaling molecules. This is no simple matter. It's not an on-off switch kind of thing. It's a very, very complicated system. And the mRNA insertion hijacks and distorts the entire immune system everywhere in your body. And so everything that the immune system does is disrupted. Well, the immune system is the only reason that there are living organisms called us on the planet. Without the immune system, we are already dead.
Yeah.
And so this distorts the immune system function in such a way that when the same incitant, that is the virus or a similar virus, is encountered, and you will encounter it even if they don't do anything to release it again, you will encounter it. At the same time, the immune system has a an instruction built in now to go insane and to overreact so strongly that it makes a cytokine storm look like a minor event.
Give me give me worst case scenario, Rima, then. In
worst
that
case
instance.
Scenario, how many people in the UK have received the vaccine to date?
At least 20 million. It's probably more like 21 million now have had a first dose.
Let's assume that vaccination stops today. Unfortunately, it's not a realistic assumption, but let's assume it for a moment. What's the total population of the UK?
About 64, 65, maybe 67 million.
So what happens if 2 months from now, let us say, or a year from now, over the period of 3 weeks, one third of the population of the UK drops dead?
Is that realistic?
Yes.
Because I was asked to put a question to you by a listener, and I won't name the listener. The listener said, does Rima think that people are just going to start dropping dead in dramatic numbers in the next 2 years? You know, given that one of the psychotic predictions is that there will be a huge reduction in the US population itself by 2026. So within the next couple of years when, as you said, new coronaviruses, which are naturally occurring, do hit somebody's immune system, that person could be in serious trouble. So you could be talking about large-scale death figures then. I'm astonished.
Judy Mikovits is a distinguished virologist.
Yeah.
Who has bravely spoken out. She has said this. Sherry Tenpenny is an osteopathic physician who has made an intense and honest study of vaccines over the last 20 or so years. She has said this. My assessment, looking at the laboratory data of mRNA technology and the fact that these are, as Tal Sachs says, hacking the software of life. The immune system is very much a part of the software of life, by the way. My prediction, given the fact that the same people who are bringing you these monstrosities are the people who are avowedly and publicly advocating
depopulation.
Drastic reduction in the population, a compression. Think about it. A third of the population of the UK drops dead. And remember that since vaccination or since the jab started in British care facilities, the death rate has gone up by 46% just from the immediate reaction.
Yeah,
to
and they're saying
toxicity in your body.
We've seen very concerning things happen, haven't we?
They're bumping off grandma and grandpa, taking care of Aunt Tilly. And the next thing that happens, let's say, is that within 3 weeks, a third of the population sickens and dies. The hospital system will be totally overwhelmed. The economic system will collapse. The food distribution system will collapse. The social system will collapse. There will be riots in the street. There will be panic. There will be all kinds of dystopian realities. And then the beneficent leaders of the world will swoop in and they will reorganize society even further. And they will bring about Agenda 2030.
Before we talk about that, Rima,
Agenda 21.
You have. Sorry to interrupt. I've got to get in there. What you're saying now is startling, because I've interviewed Sherry Tenpenny. I've interviewed Professor Dolores Cahill, a fellow Irish citizen, well, an Irish woman, of course, great professor from UCD. And they totally agree with you in terms of what this vaccine might do to people in the future when they're exposed to viruses. But none of them said to me that the impact would be as immediate and as dramatic and that we would see so many deaths as soon as you think we'll see those deaths. Now, I'm not saying that because, you know, I'm saying that they're right and you're wrong. I don't know. But I pray to God you're wrong, that we don't see so many deaths.
I pray to God that I'm wrong too. Richie, you asked me what the worst case scenario is.
No, you did, to be fair. Yeah.
Maybe the better case scenario is it'll take 2 years for that many people to die.
Yeah.
But I didn't make this up because I had a bad nightmare and woke up with a sour stomach.
No, I know you haven't. Science. You're a qualified woman. I know you haven't. Yes. What you are telling me is your expert opinion. I totally respect it. And like I said, pretty much everybody I've had on, I call them the band because they're not allowed on mainstream media, as qualified as they are. They agree with you word for word. And to be fair, I miscategorised you. You did give me the worst case scenario. Whereas Professor Cahill and others said that we might see these deaths in the next couple of years. But they also said, and I think you'll probably agree with this, they said at that stage, those extraordinary death numbers in the future will be blamed on viruses.
Absolutely. Yeah. No question. Just as I said earlier, Richie, and I know these people and I respect them and I hope they respect me. We came to the same conclusions from the same data.
Yeah.
It's impossible not to come to these conclusions unless you are an agent of disinformation, unless you are soothing the population to quiet it before you dispose of it. Now, under Agenda 21, now Agenda 2030, one of the things that is to happen is that the remaining human beings on the planet, less than 10% of the population at the time that Agenda 21 was ratified by most of the nations in the world, will be compressed into transit villages, occupying 1% of the space, the landmass of the planet. In those transit villages, you will live out your life in a space 16 square meters large or small. All of this nonsense about tiny houses and aren't they wonderful, yeah, is propaganda to get you used to the idea that you really should own nothing. As Klaus said, you will own nothing and you will be happy. Happier.
We'll be thrilled about it. Yeah, that's right.
Yes.
Psychopaths, these people.
So the mRNA vaccines are designed to hijack the software of life, as Dr. Tal Sachs said. And I will post an article with a link to that TED Talk later today on open source truth. I urge all of your listeners to visit opensourcetruth.com regularly. The information there is trustworthy, not pleasant, but trustworthy. Then we have another type of vaccine, the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, which has been approved in the United States just in the last weeks. And the Johnson & Johnson vaccine is a different technology, also a novel technology that has never been used in humans before. It is so dangerous that under U.S. law, which is being completely ignored, by the way, before a vector vaccine, which is what the Johnson & Johnson model is, before a vector vaccine can be deployed, an environmental impact study has to be done because it releases into the body a brand new viral organism that has never existed before. Wow. It's a hybrid adenovirus. And by the way, the HIV virus is an adenovirus. If you believe that the HIV-1 virus causes HIV, well, maybe that's related to the fact that in Australia, the Australian vaccine that they were developing had to be halted and discarded after billions of dollars were spent on it because the people who received it developed HIV. Oh, that's a bit of a problem. Anyway, the adenovirus vector has not been exposed to an environmental impact study in the U.S. or anywhere else that I'm aware of, but it injects a novel virus into the body, and then the spike protein is carried around and inserted into the DNA, because what does a virus do? A virus hijacks your DNA and forces that DNA to reproduce not the proteins that you need, but the virus itself, to reproduce the virus so that the virus can then exit your cell, usually by causing it to explode and scatter the viruses through your body so they can go around and capture other cells to produce themselves. And it's the immune system that stops this. But if you distort and destroy the immune system's communication and function, then that's not going to happen too well, is it?
No.
So we're looking at yet another novel, horrendous experiment. And these are experimental. And under the laws of most countries, including the United States, you have the absolute right to refuse an experiment or any medical treatment that you don't wish on your body, which is why the Natural Solutions Foundation has produced the Advanced Vaccine Directive, which is a correct assertion of your right under the laws of informed consent in virtually every country in the world. But the point is that the Johnson & Johnson non-vaccine and the Pfizer-BioNTech non-vaccine and the Moderna non-vaccine and the AstraZeneca non-vaccine, and I'll get to AstraZeneca in a moment, these are of astounding uncharacterized danger. But you may say, perhaps it's worth it. Perhaps we as humanity should take the risk of having our DNA and our immune systems and our very lives put at risk because of this horrible, horrible disease. Well, we all know that's nonsense. The survivability is upwards of 98.5%, and all of the numbers have been inflated, the death numbers, the case numbers. It's all nonsense. It's all political
theater.
Because
of that worthless PCR test, which is absolutely worthless. They've used that to drive up the numbers.
Worthless. But then we have to ask, well, what about the effectiveness? And I'm sure your listeners all know that what is touted as effectiveness, whether it's 78%, 94.5%, 96%, whatever those nonsense numbers are, none of these so-called vaccines have been tested to see if they limit transmission.
Absolutely.
So there's no reason to think that they do. None of these so-called vaccines have been tested or examined to see whether they prevent the development of disease. There's no reason to think that they do. None of these so-called vaccines have been tested or examined to see if they prevent the severity of symptoms if diseases develop. There's no reason to think that they do. The only thing that they're effective at is supposedly lowering the number of positive tests, but we know the tests are worthless. And we know that you can crank up the replication cycles when you want more positives and crank down the replication cycles when you want fewer positives. So we're talking about garbage on top of nonsense, on top of fecal matter.
Absolutely. So when they want people to think lockdowns are working, they don't amplify the test cycles as many times. And when they want people to believe there's loads of cases, they amplify the test samples dozens of times. Dr. Rima Lebo is our guest now. You're going to come back on with me. I'm telling you. I'm ordering you, my friend, to come back on with me no later than a couple of weeks' time. And then we can go into more of this. But I'm watching the clock now. We've only got 6 minutes to go.
Right,
and I know that you and others are trying to set up some sort of tribunal. Now, as quick as you can, tell us about that. What is that meant to do?
As quick as I can. The International Tribunal of Natural and Common Law for Public Health and Justice is a tribunal of conscience founded by Alfred Lambremont Weber, a journalist and attorney in Canada. He's been a member of several tribunals of conscience, and I am honored to be one of the judges of this tribunal of conscience, and we have come to judgments against the bad actors, including the Queen of England, Prince Philip, Prince Charles, Gates, the vaccine companies, and all of the others.
And the banksters.
And we've issued judgments, and those judgments are, you ready? Put your seatbelt on. They are enforceable in 113 countries, and we are currently working on having our judgments enforced by a team of international legal experts and judges in around the world, and we intend to stop this genocide, whether it's the 5G genocide, the vaccine genocide, the aspartame genocide. This is a perhaps our best hope, other than personal refusal.
Well, good luck with it. I say good luck because I know how corrupt and filthy the judiciary is in all of these countries. And I know that it might be more symbolic than life-changing. And that's not in any way now to be critical of your efforts. And I know you're experienced enough to know sometimes that's how it goes.
Let me respond to that. Yeah. Let me respond to that because it's a very, very important comment, Richie. It's symbolic and therefore meaningless unless it is supported by the will of the people around the world demanding that these judgments be enforced and the genocide be stopped.
You're 100%
and that's
right.
Why we are engaged in a public information program to get people basically in an uproar against this program that's being foisted upon them to kill and enslave them.
Can I ask
that
you this, Rima?
The strength is.
Can I ask you this? And before you go in 3 minutes, you will give us all the website details we need. Let me ask you, this is the $64,000 question. Do you still have faith? It's a very strange word to use when speaking to a doctor, a scientist, faith. But do you have faith that enough people will look at this and see through the lies and the deception and the dangers of these untested, dangerous therapies? Enough people will see through it to rail against it, to stand up. Do you still have faith that there's enough time left for people to stop it?
If we don't, we're doomed. I don't know what the answer to that is, Richie. I know what I do with every one of my days and with the hours of my days and my nights. I work fervently and in a fevered passion to make sure that it's still possible.
Yeah.
It depends on each and every man and woman. Are you free? Are you slave? Are you disposable? And you have to take a stand and say, don't you dare. Those are the three most important words any free person can utter. And if you are too cowardly, lazy, or distracted to utter them, then you are at best a slave and at worst dead.
Well said. And before you go, thanks for coming back on today. It's almost like you were never away. I really appreciate you coming back on.
Thank you.
And I hope we'll get you back on in 2 to 3 weeks' time at the latest. I know you're busy. Direct our listeners now to the websites of importance, please.
Website, the most important website, I believe, is opensourcetruth.com. There on the front page, you will find a place to put in your email and subscribe to the newsletter. Very important thing to do because there is breaking news all the time about what you need to know and what you can do. If you want the Advanced Vaccine Directive card, which is valid in virtually every country in the world, including the UK, Ireland, Australia, the entire EU, go to nsfmarketplace.com. That stands for Natural Solutions Foundation, nsfmarketplace.com. You're looking for the advanced directive cards. The Advanced Vaccine Directive card, the gold card, one for each person who is to be protected, and we send an instruction sheet on precisely how to use it. Yes, it's valid outside the United States. Yes, if enough people present their rights in a correct way, the globalists always back off.
When you're on next time, we'll get into the coercive methods being used or being planned by governments to ensure that people take vaccines. We can certainly go to town on that subject and others next time. I'm delighted to hear you sounding. I mean, you've always sounded well. You sound strong and well. And I'm glad that you've got Timber there watching out for you and keeping an eye on the door, Rima. It's great to have you back on. Thanks for your time today.
Thank you so much.
No, it's great to have you back. It really is. I can't wait to do it again. And Godspeed to you and your colleagues. Thanks, Rima.
Thank you.
Bye for now. The great Dr. Rima Labo, old and trusted and valued friend of this programme, live on the line from her home this afternoon. It's exactly 5.5 minutes to the top of the hour. That's about it for the programme today. Let me just put my thing back on there. Yeah, I've got it back on there. Thanks for your comments during that, by the way. Thanks. Hi, Joe. Joe Boddington. How you doing, Joe? I got your mail, Joe, by the way, about a potential guest. I'll sort that out in the coming days. So I will. I'm up to me tonsils at the moment. A friend of mine said to me the other day, "You're terrible, Richie, not getting back to people." By people, he meant him. I'm swamped at the moment. I'm really swamped at the moment. It's just me here. I'm the producer, editor and presenter of the programme. I don't want any sympathy for that. But I get on average 500 to 600 emails a week from people. And that's people who are from various groups that want to get on the programme, or they've got some information they want me to know. That's not including contact forms through the website. It's mental at the moment, and I just can't be dealing with all of that. I really can't. It's enough to keep the website going with articles and produce the programme. So I am sorry for not getting back to people as soon as maybe I should. Hey, that's a very good time for me to say, if you ever sent the price of a cup of coffee, or £5, or £7, or £10, or £50, or £100 over the years to the Richie Allen Radio Show, I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart. A very good friend of mine, I've never met him, but he's been listening to the programme since day one, a guy called Bill Grace. Bill has listened to this programme since it began in September of 2014. And he's a bit of a super listener. I won't say super fan, because that's wrong. Nobody should be a fan. He's a super listener. And he said to me the other day, Bill, he said, "Richie, I'm pretty certain that this week sees the 1,500th episode of the Richie Allen Radio Show in its current form." I said, "How do you know that, Bill?" And he said, "Looking at archive websites from David Icke, looking at your own archive website, looking at Podomatic, looking at iTunes, and counting the YouTube videos and all of that, I'm pretty certain that this week, either today or tomorrow, sees episode 1,500 of this particular show." That's an extraordinary thing. If it's true, I think he's probably close enough. I think it's around about 1,500. So if you ever made a contribution to support this programme, thanks from the bottom of my heart. Because without you, we couldn't do it. I couldn't do it. There is no we. I couldn't do it. I couldn't pay for it and I couldn't do it. So thank you. I mean that. Thank you so much to Tara Porter, wonderful lady, our one, the parent who's fighting for her children and their rights not to be masked and to be herded around like cattle and distancing and all of that garbage. Facebook, Fight for Our Kids. Telegram, Fight for Our Kids. Say hello to Tara Porter. And thanks again to Dr. Rima Labo for her time on today's programme. I've been the BBG. Thanks for being with me today. I look forward to speaking with you tomorrow, Thursday, the usual time of 5 o'clock. Until then, take care of yourselves and one another. Bye now.